the Severance Media Club podcast. I'm here, Melissa, with my co-host Amanda, but we were missing a very cool voice behind the microphone. But we're here to try to talk about Severance episode 5 as we are doing our monthly recap. And then we're adding in some like extra fun side media as we go through talking about Schmigadoon. Amanda, are you excited? We're here. We're free. The boss is away. The cats are going to play. I don't know. All that kind of stuff.
All that. Yeah. We're going to get all loosey-goosey here talking about Schmigadoon, which is a show about two people named Josh and Melissa. My two Severance Media Club co-hosts. Unfortunately, Josh is absent. I assume that he is stuck in some musical alternate reality and cannot cross the bridge back to us, Melissa, to talk about Severance Media Club this week. But luckily, we are talking about a musical show. We're talking about Schmigadoon. So we have a great guest here to help us through all of the musical references that I undoubtedly missed. I'm really happy that we're joined this week by Todd. Todd, welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be back. I haven't been on since the first like feedback episode that y'all did. So I'm glad to talk about Severance, and I'm even more glad to talk more about Schmigadoon because I love this show, and I'm always happy to get a chance for more people to test it out and see and see what it is I love about it so much.
Yeah, this is fun. Like, I think Josh was a little bit surprised by the results of the poll. So just to sort of reset what we're doing here, if you're just jumping in loosey-goosey to the Media Club, first of all, we encourage that. That is completely allowed. Welcome. And every week every month, we pick a new piece of Severance adjacent media. And actually, we don't pick it, Melissa. It's our beloved listeners who pick it for us. And we, in our infinite wisdom, decided that the category for this month was different Apple TV Plus series that start with the letter S, of which there are many.
Yeah, for some reason, this seems to be a theme. The silos and the Severances and the Servants and the Snoopies and, you know, there are many of them.
The Shining Girls. And we between us, you know, the Shrinking, we have between us have podcasted about more than I can even count right now. But none of those were selected by our audience. In the infinite wisdom, they chose Schmigadoon, which Josh seemed sort of reluctant to watch. And now here he is having bowed out of it.
Very suspicious.
I see how he is.
He's off on vacation in Maine, which is, you know, I don't know if that's even a real state. I think he's
I'm sure there's a Schmigadoon version of Maine. But this was very, very fun. We'll try to draw some parallels between Severance and Schmigadoon, aside from just the letter that they start with and the network that they air on. But yeah, so this was, I don't know if I would have gotten around to watching this one if it wasn't for Severance Media Club, even though I had heard really great things and was like interested in this cast.
Yeah, obviously it had been on my radar because Adam and Todd were covering it. And, you know, I'm a big fan of your other One Indescribable podcast. We've talked Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Zoe's over there, which has been great. But it was definitely one of those that was on my radar. I didn't know when I was going to get to it. But as Todd, you were saying before we started, it's like a pretty quick binge. So why don't you give us like just the elevator pitch for Schmigadoon? If anybody happens to be listening and they didn't actually watch it in the last month, like why should people watch Schmigadoon?
All right. So the basic idea of Schmigadoon is that Keegan-Michael Key and Cecily Strong play a couple, Josh and Melissa, who are a couple of doctors whose relationship is starting to go through some growing pains. And so they decide to go to a couple's wilderness retreat. And while in the woods, they stumble into the little town of Schmigadoon, where everyone acts like it's they're in a 1930s musical, think Oklahoma, think Showboat, think Music Man, and they burst into song constantly, which Melissa is constantly thrilled about and Josh is constantly horrified by. And they try to leave and discover that they cannot leave because a leprechaun appears and tells them they cannot leave until they find true love. And so season one is all about Josh and Melissa doing their best to try to find true love since apparently their relationship doesn't quite qualify. But they eventually do realize that relationships are all about working on them and not just, you know, coasting by, and they rediscover their love for each other, and they leave, which brings us to season two, where they're back in the real world and find out the real world isn't all it's cracked up to be after experiencing the joy of musicals. So I decided to go back to Schmigadoon, but as we all know, you can't return to Schmigadoon. Instead, they wind up in Schmicago, which is a much darker musical. So basically, season one is all about like the musicals of the 30s and 40s, your Rodgers and Hammerstein, your Music Man, a little bit of Guys and Dolls influenced music as well, and some things like that. But season two is all about the 60s and 70s. So it's Sondheim, it's Kander and Ebb, it's Fosse, it's Sweeney Todd and Chicago and Cabaret. And this time they're stuck there until they find, until they're able to make a happy ending. That's the, the quest they're given for season two.
Yeah, well, so I got through all of season one, and I think, Melissa, I think you and I both got to the same place in season two. I think I got through four of the six episodes in season two. It's like, it is a really easy binge show. Like, they're roughly half hour episodes. I think some of them are a little bit longer. It's like, it's very fun and breezy. Six episode seasons. If you are a lover of musicals, I can imagine, like, I'm not a super, I've seen like a handful of musicals, but I'm not a super familiar with musicals type of person. So I'm sure there's a lot of like direct references that were going over my head, but it's an extraordinarily talented cast, from the comedy chops that we have with Keegan-Michael Key and Cecily Strong to a lot of fantastic musical theater talent like Kristen Chenoweth, Alan Cumming, Ariana DeBoss, just Jane Krakowski, like just fantastic, extremely stacked cast, and I'm sure other musical theater darlings in here, and like extremely well-produced musical numbers I found that it's really delightful. It's one of those things you kind of can't watch without smiling.
Yeah, it was fun. I of course started listening to the podcast recaps along with, I was like, once I got through season one, I got to listen to the season one recap, and Adam and Todd do not disappoint in terms of their like breadth of and depth of knowledge on this stuff. And so all of the references that they were catching that I didn't, especially in that first era, I'm like you, Todd, I definitely picked up more of the references in the second one, 'cause it's much more the genre that I'm more familiar with. But yeah, it was just very cool to listen to you both picking up on all of the homages and everything that was happening in that. And yeah, the cast is just like wildly talented. Probably my big hot take, Josh sucks. Josh is awful. Like, he's such a jerk.
Yeah. Season one, Josh is definitely a jerk. Are we talking about Josh Wigler, or are we talking about Josh on the show?
I am definitely talking about one of those two people. Okay. In particular.
Melissa, Dr. Melissa is amazing, and Josh sucks. That's what I heard.
Exactly. Okay. Lines drawn. But yeah, and like the whole point at the end of the first season, like, mild spoiler, you know, they both come together, and I'm like, I don't know, I feel like only one of you was in the wrong early on here. Like, I feel like this is a very one-sided relationship going on, but maybe that's, I don't know. It didn't seem to get the play on the podcast as much as I was expecting. I was expecting more hot takes about the relationship themselves. Y'all were just very focused on like the music and, you know, all of the production and all of that.
Yeah, I can see that. I would say in the first season, basically because we only like did like a season one recap, and I think that's totally where the relationship was like really, really stormy. So we like tried to cram all six episodes into one one recap. So we didn't drill down to a lot of that. I'll say that I think that both of them had their faults in the relationship. I definitely see that season one Josh definitely sucks, but I think that season one Melissa has her flaws as well. I think it kind of does a good job. I thought I know will it be better if I call her Mel instead of Melissa? Well, that
no, I go by Mel. They go okay. Mel, like one time in the second season, and I was like, nope, that's weirder, that makes it worse, I don't like it.
I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't here. But no, I think that I thought the show did a good job of showing that she was very set in her ways and had her like pie in the sky. This is what a relationship needs to be. And if it didn't match up to that, she wasn't willing to compromise at all. Whereas his whole thing was like being shut off from his emotions and not really being willing to try things. And I think the first season did a good job of getting them both out of that comfort zone. I think he was more in the wrong than she was, but I think her overreacting at times to things was like a big, okay, yeah, they definitely need some time apart to figure out what's going on. And one of my favorite things about the second season is they're together, and so we don't necessarily have that. And so we can just get to see them like playing off each other, having like inside jokes, like enjoying each other. My favorite thing about the second season is that Josh finally is into musicals, just because it's like the 60s, 70s, kind of darker, kind of sexier musicals. The opening musical number in season two, as all these people come up in the kind of like these cabaret era-esque outfits and like fishnets and scantily clad everything, and they're singing "Welcome to Schmickago," and Josh is like grooving out to it, and I was like, okay, rein it in there, bud.
Yeah, that was like some of the feedback I heard about Schmigadoon was like people saying, well, if this first season doesn't do it for you, definitely also skip ahead and check out the second season, because it's playing with like such different genres. So if you're more of a Josh than a Melissa and your heart isn't with the old school musicals of the 30s and 40s and you like something a little bit darker and a little bit groovier, season two might be for you. And I definitely think that this is the kind of show that you can jump into in season two without having missed much.
Yeah, I think if you watch like an episode or two of the first season, it's not vibing with you, then you can try the second season, because we had two guests on the PSR recaps of it, and both of the guests that we had are people who did not make it through season one. Neither Troy nor Zed made it through season one, but they both made it all the way through season two and love season two, because that is more of their era musicals. It's more of my era of musicals too. I mean, Sweeney Todd is like one of my all-time favorite musicals. Yeah. I love, and just a few, like it's Cabaret, it's Chicago, it's Sweet Charity, there's some Jesus Christ Superstar, Godspell, like it's Hair, a lot of that type of stuff in the second season. So if that's more your speed when it comes to musical stuff, then that's definitely a good starting point.
Yeah,
I'll say I'm always curious about people who aren't as familiar with musicals and what their take on it is and how much they enjoy it. So I'm always happy to hear someone like you, Amanda, who aren't a huge musical buff, that you are enjoying it, because there are a ton of references. There are references that I didn't get, that I wouldn't find out about till like later when I was looking stuff up for the podcast. Go, oh, I didn't catch that or catch that. Some things are super obvious, some things are a lot more subtle. I think it's one of those things that the more knowledge you have, like it's like nice Easter eggs, but I don't think it's necessarily required to enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it really is rewarding for huge fans of musicals, because you can tell, like, I mean, even as somebody who's not as familiar, it reads as like a love letter to all of these great works. But I do feel like there's enough just kind of in the cultural zeitgeist that even if I haven't seen things, I could say like, oh, I bet that's Jesus Christ Superstar, even though I've never seen it, or that's God. Like, I feel like enough of this stuff just kind of permeates our culture that there are recognizable tropes that they're drawing on that like read as effective. Like, I've never seen Sweeney Todd, but I know the sort of iconography of it. So there's a lot of recognizable stuff. I was curious to hear, but maybe probably both from both of you, Melissa and Todd, like what were some of the standout performances from season one and season two? Because I feel like there's just so many great characters and really wonderful performances.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Wicked girl. Like Kristen Chenoweth has made me an emotional wreck on more than one occasion. So just like anything that she does, that patter song in season one is just ridiculous. And I remember you talking about it on the recap that it was like all one take that she got on the third try, which is just mind-blowing, like the just oodles of talent. And yeah, I think any of the like more, I'm thinking, help me, is it Kaput in like early, it's like the first episode of season one that was like also a really cool one that I was like, oh, this is very fun, this is the style, I'm very excited for like this season. That was, I think, the one that really got me excited for that. So that those are probably like the two that really stand out. I know Adam loved corn pudding. It's so weird to the point that it like comes back around to be like, okay, I kind of love it, but also it's so weird. I think
that is like one of the funniest numbers in all of season one and through season two where I saw it. Like, I think that is so funny. Like, I've been like, I've made joke because my husband and I watched it together. Like, we made jokes about like corn pudding multiple times since having seen it, because one of the things that I thought, like, it's a little bit of a trick to keep, like, to make sure that this stays on the parody side of musical parody, because it also, like, some numbers just kind of feel like musical numbers, and I felt like corn pudding really effectively like pushes the concept to the point of absurdity where it's clearly I'm watching a parody of a musical number, and it's not like just a musical number that sort of works in its own right. So I thought the show, like, there were sometimes where my criticism of it was that it wasn't like fully parodying as much as I needed it to. And corn pudding was one of those numbers, which I just thought was like so delightfully ridiculous that you're like, this is a parody of a musical.
I'm glad you brought up Melissa, because I was going to bring it up, because I know Adam, who will be listening to this. Adam is also traveling to his own version of Schmacago right now, I think. So Adam's on the road, so he was able to be here today, but he would have been very upset if we didn't mention his favorite song from season one, Corn Puddin'. I think for me, my favorite song from season one was Cross That Bridge. I love that because it has very much big, like, Guys and Dolls, Sit Down, You're Rocking the Boat, or Brotherhood of Man from How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, that big, like, kind of almost gospel feel of it, and like the big group number. And that's like one of my favorite types of song from that era of musicals. So that's one that always really resonates with me. In season two, it's really hard to pick just one because I love so much of season two. But out of the stuff that you guys have seen, Talk to Daddy is one that I have listened to far more often than I probably should. Talk to Daddy is a great, fun song.
Really good.
And it's like very much a direct riff on a number from the musical Sweet Charity, specifically the movie version performed by Sammy Davis Jr. And like the choreography is actually taken from other parts of Sweet Charity, but the setting is taken from a different part of Sweet Charity. So it's like all this hodgepodge of all that type of stuff, but it's probably one of my favorite songs. But there's so much love in both seasons for me. But it's really hard for me to pick just one. I've been listening to the season two soundtrack almost nonstop. I'm sure whenever I do like the final Spotify wrap, most of my top songs for the year is going to be like the Schmacago stuff. But I really want to talk about performances. I really want to shout out, like, first of all, Jane Krakowski. Has just like this, she's barely in season one. She's in one episode of season one, but she's in a few more episodes of season two. And she has this amazing number called Bells and Whistles.
Yeah. Where
Cinco Paul, who's the creator of the show, asked her, so what skills do you have? And she told him all of her skills. And so he threw everything in there, tap dancing and roller skating. And she's like, I've always wanted to learn how to do the trapeze. So they paid for her to go take trapeze lessons. She could do the trapeze. That is her. If you watch the episode, that is her on the trapeze and all the shots on trapeze.
Wow.
It is Jane Krakowski. The first time I watched it, I'm like, is that her or a stunt double? But no, it was all her. So that number is just this complete showcase of just how insanely talented Jane Krakowski is. So I always want to throw that out. And also Aaron Tveit, who plays Ratsky and Danny in the first season, and hippie Jesus Christ superstar analog Topher in season two, he is so funny. I've seen him in a couple things. He was in the Les Mis film. He was in the original production of Next to Normal, like a big Broadway guy. But he just gets to be goofy in this. And he's so good at like the comedy aspects of it. But he also is so good at just embodying the spirit of the genre that he's in. Like his dance moves, his movement in season one, as they're doing those old school dance stuff, he just like feels like they plucked him out of a musical film from like the 50s, of a musical from the 30s and 40s. You know, it just like felt exactly like a 40s, 50s musical, and his movement and everything. He just nailed it. And I'm just like so impressed with him.
Yeah, seeing these like Broadway veteran actors, like triple threats, like incredibly talented, getting to perform in something like this. It just looks like so much fun. I feel like as a television watcher who doesn't see a lot of this type of theater, it was really an amazing showcase of all the unbelievable talent. And it just looks like one of those shows that must have been a blast to be a part of, although we can only assume, because there's more and more of these stories of mistreated talent coming out right now. We're recording this on the first day of the SAG Screen Actor Guild strike. So we'll get a little bit to that, because people had some questions about when season two of Severance will finally be released. And the answer is not soon. We could go on and on about how stacked and talented this cast is.
Yeah. And one thing I didn't really mention in my elevator pitch recap was that the big difference between Schmigadoon and Schmigacago, not only is it like a change in eras, but basically almost the entire original cast of season one of Schmigadoon townsfolk appear as Schmigacago city folk, but they're completely different characters. They have different names and different personalities. So you get to see all these people kind of go from one end of the spectrum to another in a lot of cases. It's like they even make a joke because Josh, who's not a theater person, is like trying to talk to this guy like he's the mayor. And Melissa's response is like, "Would you wave hi to Sutton Foster in the music video, just because you knew her from Thoroughly Modern Millie?" And Josh's like, "I guess not." But so you get to see all of them kind of like put on different hats. And so some people who are like super, prominent in season one aren't as prominent in season two, and vice versa. Dove Cameron had like a very small part in season one, is a pretty big part of season two. Same thing with Aaron DeVate, whereas Aaron Dubois, she was a big part of season one, and she's unfortunately barely in season two. I think she's in two episodes. We also had some people who didn't make it back, but it's like they're basically the same people in different roles completely. Like in the musical, but also it's this weird reality. So it's like they have no memory of who they were in the other place. Is it really them or some twins? Is this their severed cells when they grew from one town to another? Yeah. Are they suddenly, this is the severed Schmigacago version versus the severed Schmigadoon?
Yes, there's our tie-in. Yeah, so what we do is we torture ourselves to come up with connections between whatever we have watched and Severance. And we did watch Severance episode 5 to prepare for this podcast. So we'll talk a little bit about our impressions of episode 5 on this go around. But we did get a great audience question this week. If Severance and Schmigadoon exist in the same universe, what does the crossover episode look like? A musical episode of Severance. What do we think?
Yeah, it was so funny because I was watching Schmigadoon, not expecting it to have anything to do with Severance, right? Other than the fact that they both start with the letter S. And then I was watching it and I was like, actually, there is sort of an idea like that loosely ties these two together in terms of, as opposed to like people within the same universe being split into, it's that like the one people, in order to like escape the realities of their outie lives, they're going to Schmigadoon, right? Or they seek out Schmigadoon in the second season, basically, because they're like, well, we're not happy. We're going to go like try to find that again. That's, and so I was like, oh, wow. They're like basically severing themselves without like missing out on the memories. And I do think that there is sort of enough, there's more meat there in terms of this difference with both Josh and Melissa and how they're approaching it, but then also all of the cast that are kind of in this world that have these kind of two severed versions of themselves, which I think is interesting. So I don't know, Todd, do you have like initial thoughts on the Schmigadoon version of Severance or the Severance version of Schmigadoon?
Oh man, I'm just thinking about all the Schmigadoonians like in like little dance party mode, and I just like I would love to
the
see
music
that.
Dance experience is like way better.
Yes, I would love to see the Schmigadoon Schmigacago music dance experience. I think that would be something to behold. It's just hard to wrap my head around the two like being combined because they are very, very different in like almost every way, tone, everything. They are both very heightened realities and very different realities, but in completely other ways. Even though Chicago is supposed to be much darker, it's nowhere near as dark as Severance world.
Yeah, probably not as dark as Severance. Although maybe, like, you know, in this episode, in the grim barbarity of optics and design, we do have Mark and Helly taking a walk down the hallway. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, in one of those rooms, like, you know, maybe a few doors down from the baby goats, like, there's like the whole cast of Chicago doing a musical number. We're like, we don't know what's going on in Lubin. It's a big, confusing place.
That's very true. I can see the goats. I can see the goats popping up in Chicago. I can see, you know, so I can definitely see there's no telling what Keir has going on.
Which musical do we think has the most Severance vibes? Like, if you were just going to say, okay, we're not doing a whole era, we're just doing like one musical in the Severance universe. Cause I think that that works better than like trying to fit a Severance idea into Schmigadoon. Like, I think it's too much its own thing, but I think like, could you add some musical numbers to Severance? What style might they be? Or, you know, I think that you could have the like severed innies breaking out into song occasionally, but I don't know what like how that works tonally.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting weird flashes of like so the show Riverdale kind of did that, where like every season they would have like the school put on the musical, but then the people would just randomly break into song in their regular lives and not just in the musical, and they try to shoehorn the stuff in. Like the some of them worked much better than others. Let's just say that. So I'm just trying to think like what could really work well in the Severance world. And man, yeah, I should have come prepared better for this.
For this random question, I
think. Yeah. I think that the Severance cast would be tremendous in a musical. Like, I would love to see like Adam Scott and John Turturro and Christopher Walken and Zach Cherry break into song. That would delight me to no end.
Yeah, we know Milchick can dance, so like,
oh, I'm excited. Yeah, incredible. Yes, it would be incredible.
Yeah, there's so many shows that do that, like one musical episode, right? Like, you know, we've got the Buffy of it all. Like, I think that a musical episode of Severance is probably not what I actually want. But if they decided to do it, I think I could get there. I could get on board with it.
Yeah, I'm generally like open to musical episodes, but then you get like that, you know, like the Grey's Anatomy musical episode, which go, no, why did we do this? And so I would have faith that the Severance people, if they did decide to go that way, that they would be able to do it well, because the show has like, you know, just been so well done so far. But there is always that fear of like, oh, is this gonna be our jump the shark moment? Is this gonna do it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm okay if we don't do it, but you know, maybe there is some. So I could, okay, I've got it. I figured it out.
Ooh.
It's MDR versus O&D West Side Story.
West Side
style.
Story.
Story. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we did it. I think it writes itself.
Yes. 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 The MDR massacre, the grim barbarity of optics and design. It's all there. We already have the rivalry, the mythology around it. I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I could see like a fun song where you have them singing about their pouch people, you know, just like all about the mythology that they have.
Marvel like offspring. We have our star-crossed lovers.
Exactly. That's
Irving.
What I'm saying.
Yeah, that's great stuff, Melissa.
Yeah, now I just want to see the two of them singing tonight to each other. That's all, you know.
Right?
Tonight. Yes.
Yes. Adam likes to accuse me of hating love, and I need to have Adam listen to any Severance podcast that I've been on, where we have talked so much about our love for Bert and Irving.
Love and story for the ages, yes.
I think that I'm going to throw this one in his face the next time he has to tell me that I hate love.
Yeah, there are multiple music and dance scenes in Severance, none of which we've gotten to yet in our rewatch here in episode 5. But We do have, of course, the music dance experience, which has been much talked about, but also the waffle party has a bit of a dance number, does it not, Melissa?
Oh gosh, I had purposefully forgot about the waffle party. Yeah, it does. And then, okay, so what musical might be most akin to the waffle party? This might not be a musical that I've... well, I'm thinking, like, isn't Spring Awakening supposed to be pretty scandalous?
Yeah, Spring Awakening is definitely supposed to be pretty scandalous, like an O Calcutta type thing, you know. So there are definitely some musicals that came out that were very much pushing the, you know, pushing the boundaries on that type of thing. I mean, Hair has like the whole like nude scene, mm-hmm. but I don't think that's really the love in and all of that. But it's mm-hmm. much not quite as graphic as the it doesn't push us quite as far as the Waffle Party does.
Yeah, the Waffle Party is also just very, I think it's what we don't see as a part of the Waffle Party that has really kind of tantalized all of us and made mm-hmm. us very like horrified and intrigued at the same mm-hmm. time. So yeah, that is fair. This has been a more successful conversation around brands that I think I was expecting when we started talking about this.
No, we can spin gold, Melissa, out of anything here. Do we have more to say about Schmigadoon? Or do we want to shift a little bit more into our discussion of Severance Episode 5, The Grim Barbarity of Optics and Design?
Yeah, let's go for it. I think that we'll, you know, continue to keep Schmigadoon in mind.
We'll leave Schmigadoon. If you want to sing any of your thoughts, Todd, please don't hold back.
That's a dangerous offer there. Dangerous for the listeners. You'll have to listen to me sing.
Todd, as someone who's heard you sing a whole musical, I beg to differ. If anyone doesn't know, the great Adam and Todd, in addition to podcasting about Schmigadoon, also wrote multiple D&D musicals, and they are incredible. Todd is quite the lyricist, and then Adam is very kind of musically talented on top of that. So the two together have created a lot of gold that we've enjoyed over in the D&D corner of the Discord over the years.
That's amazing. So you're bringing lots of expertise here to this discussion today, Todd. Excellent. So it's been really, I've been finding it really interesting to revisit these episodes, like in this month, one episode a month cadence, which is like not how I've ever watched any other show. You know, all of these months later, while we're waiting in this long off season, for like, just kind of the quick recap, this is the episode that immediately follows Helly's attempt to end her life and her outie's life, which was gets intercepted by Mr. Grainer. And then in this episode, we have Mark is going to be mostly preoccupied with attending his sister's labor and delivery at a special birthing cabin, where we are introduced to the richest lady in the most psychotically expensive birthing cabin for the first time. So this is the episode that during which we get Devin's delivery here. Lots of great Rickon stuff, lots of more you are passages. And meanwhile, the innies are going on their own little adventures, trying to get outside of the watchful eye of Miss Casey, who's been assigned to essentially babysit Helly. But Mark and Helly are going to go out exploring, while Irving is going to go on his own mission to find love, to see his beloved Bert. And he has a babysitter of his own, because Dylan does not trust Optics and Design as far as he can throw them. We see the two versions of the painting that shows a massacre, a great with one department raiding another. More momentum here for all of the innies kind of going on their own rebellious journeys to try to discover what's actually going on.
It's a funny episode, because I think there's so much incredible gold in this episode. Like, this is the episode that gives us the kelp. It gives us all of the UUR quotes. We talk about larvae in pouches, like so many good things. And yet there's not a lot of like forward plot.
Baby goats. Baby goats. Baby, so many, two words, so many baby goats.
Yeah. But there's like, this was a big episode in terms of like setting up mysteries and not so much like answering any questions or moving plot forward very much. It was just a lot of like, here's who is this woman? What's her deal? Who are these people? What are they up to at work all day? Why is Miss Casey so weird? What's going on with Irving and the black paint stuff? Like, and there were just so many questions that we were like, there's so much going on. We are five episodes into this season and not getting any answers. We are only getting more questions all the time.
At the end of this episode, we're a little more than halfway. I've also been trying to listen to our podcast, Melissa, to sort of reorient myself to what we were thinking at the time, and you said almost exactly the same thing. You're like, there's more questions than answers. We're still revealing mysteries in episode five, and I'm going to need the show to start giving me some answers, or else I'm going to be disappointed. So you are very true to yourself here in having that comment. But yeah, like, I think that this is a little bit of like the, and this is exactly what you said, Melissa, so I'm going to quote you. This felt at the time, and I think that the subsequent episodes bear it out, like you're on the roller coaster and you're just inching to the very, very top before you're about to go over that peak and start the real descent, the real thrilling ride. I think that that's sort of how it bears out in the rest of the season, if I remember where we're going. What are your thoughts, Todd?
Yeah, I think that's very, very accurate. Because as I watched the episode, like, wow, I forgot all this stuff happened in this episode. There's just so much. I think like the most maybe forward momentum, and even not that much forward momentum, but just the fact that a was like kind of starting to move forward with his creating the map and bringing Helly in. And then Addie Mark is like talking to his sister about having suspicions. And so there's like a couple of things just like inching forward. But other than that, it is like so much questions. What's with the goats? What's with the multiple paintings? What's with all of this stuff?
What's Miss Cobell up to? You know, she's, there was a line actually that I went back and highlighted after watching this again, but because I still don't think I understand it. Speaking of the mystery. So the baby goats, I think we came in as a headline when we originally recap this. And I think it's because it's one of the final scenes and it's a very WTF scene. Like, you're just like, wait, this show was already weird. And now there's a man nursing baby goats in an office building. So that obviously we still don't really know what's up with the baby goats. Although we do know that it's actually clones. But the line that stuck out to me that I think we still have quite a bit of mystery about is, Milchak asks why Casey is observing Helly, and Cobell replies, "The light of discovery shines truer upon a virgin meadow than upon a beaten path. I'm trying something new with Miss Casey. Keep it between us." And now we know, like at the time, we did not know. I think there were some murmurings on Reddit that maybe Miss Casey was Gemma. And I think those people were spoiled. I don't believe them that they could have known at this point. But some people started to have the Miss Casey is Gemma theory at some point. I think we really did not have it on our radar when we originally watched episode five. Now we know that. We also know that Miss Casey comes from, like, you know, is maybe one of those people who never leaves. This virgin meadow, I think, means that she probably has even less of, like, that consciousness and memory than the innies do, that she is somehow in some ways more of a blank slate, a tabula rasa, than even, you know, Mark and Helly are. So obviously we know that Miss Casey was trying to probe whether there were these persistent memories, right? Like, that's part of what she's, her game is with Mark and Miss Casey interacting. But I thought this was really interesting, and it made me kind of realize how much about the Miss Casey slash Gemma thing we still don't understand.
Yeah, I think there's so much in this episode that we don't get. Like, why are there two versions of this picture? What is O&D actually up to? Obviously, the baby goats of it all. Mm-hmm. Did the kelp help or not? I was thinking, it's really interesting. So Schmigadoon being a show, because I remember you all talked about it early on in your season two coverage, Todd, of how quickly the plot was moving in the second season compared to the first, that you were sort of, you know, like big spoilers for season two of Chicago, that Josh had been broken out of jail and the trial had been over like in the first half of the season, that you would thought that that would be a longer season thing, and how much quicker the pace felt in season two than season one. And I'm curious if that's just sort of a similar thing in terms of like, there's so much that you have to set up in a story for a new story like this, where it's like, okay, who are these people? What are the rules of the world that we're in? You know, what is the main, what are our plot points? What are our mysteries? Everything that is being set up. And so it's interesting here that like five episodes in, we're still setting up so many of those mysteries, and we're going to get some answers by the end of season one, but certainly not all of them. And so then for a season two of Severance, if we speculate forward a little bit, I'm curious how much faster we can move now that we don't have to reset all of that up again. I do think that maybe we'll see sort of a parallel there that might be really helpful.
That's an interesting thought. Hadn't really considered that. I guess it's part of it will depend on how much of a plan they have for Severance, and like if they have like
yep.
you know, like a 3-year plan or four, you know, something like that, or if they're just like, you know, kind of like feeling out as they go along. Because if they have like an overarching plan that I can see, okay, we have to set up act one, act two, act three, and they can start trying to push things forward. But they are just more of a, you know, Lost type show where they're kind of like making up as they go along to a certain degree, then there's no telling if they're going to be able to really move the ball forward a whole lot. Hopefully they will. Hopefully it's a show. I feel that I feel pretty good that Severance knows what they're doing in terms of, I think they have like an underlying foundation of this is what this all means. I don't think they're throwing things out there just to throw them out there. I think that anything they're throwing out there, I have faith that there is like in their heads, they have the answer. Whether the answer stays the same by the time they get to revealing it, you know, who knows, things can shift. But I do feel, I feel fairly confident that this is a show where they're not just throwing things out, goats out there to be, ooh, or multiple pictures, ooh. I think that's part of it. I think doing it is part of it, but I do personally feel like it's all in aid of this grander vision that they have, or at least I'm hopeful.
At least as of the end of season one, Dan Erickson did an AMA at that point, and I can't pull up, find my notes on that right now, but I believe he said that in his mind, there was something like a 4-season arc and a 5-season arc, or a 4-season arc.
I think it was 3 and 5.
Yeah, yeah, there were two prime numbers that he threw out that there was some plan for where things were going, and that a lot of these mysteries and questions actually did have destinations that they were shooting towards. Now, I know that there has been some tumult in the show leadership and some things got rewritten in the development of season two. And as we all remember, season two filming stopped in April due to some disagreements between Dan Erickson and the other showrunner whose name is escaping me right now. And they brought in Bo Willimon, who was also one of the showrunners for House of Cards on Netflix. And he was coming in to help shepherd season two. And the plan was for season three along. Now, that production stopped in April. The writer's strike started in May. The actor's strike started on July 13th. So there's a lot of uncertainty in Hollywood and television production in general right now. And it's certainly affecting Severance as well as many other shows. Even House of the Dragon, which had persisted in production during the writer's strike is now shut down because of the Screen Actors Guild strike. So a lot of things can happen. You know, we know that strikes affect creative decisions. We can thank Jesse Pinkman's persistence beyond season one of Breaking Bad to a writer's strike when they decided to keep him around. So even though people stop writing and production stops, people continue to have ideas. Things happen in the world that change the directions that things go. So that may very well happen with Severance, but they certainly gave themselves a lot of work in terms of setting up mysteries that I think, you know, if it's going to end in a satisfying way, they're going to have to resolve some of these things.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get answers to like every single thing that we have speculated about over the course of the many hours we've spent talking about this show. And I think that that's okay. And I think that we should probably prepare ourselves for that a little bit, because I think it will make our consumption of the show and enjoyment of it that much better. But I agree that I think that there is some plan, and I don't think that they've just thrown goats out there to be like, we'll figure it out, we'll see, we'll take the best fan theory off the internet and like make that the plot, which is definitely not something I do as a DM running D&D all the time. I've just wait for your players to come up with like a good answer to the puzzle and be like, yep, that's it. That's the answer I had planned all along. But I don't think they're going to do that. This is, you know, a much more important show than some random D&D thing. So, but it's interesting to, sort of be at this point of one season in. I think that where we are going to be after a second season of Severance, you know, looking down the barrel of hopefully a third, we will just have, you know, it's very obvious to say we will have twice as much information as we have now. And I think that that will just be really helpful. And so right now we just really don't know. And I think that it's something where it's, you know, this show has given us so much fodder to speculate about. I think that the fact that we are still here, you know, like a year and a half later at this point, still talking about this show is proof of that. And so I have no doubt that like Dan Erickson's mind is still going right now thinking about this show and thinking about how he wants to do it. And you know, I think that he and everybody involved in this show like deserve to get paid for the amount of thought that goes into this show. So it'll come when it comes, and in the meantime we will talk about it and think about it and wonder. And it's one of those things where I think until proven otherwise, we just have to assume that all of that thinking on our part isn't going to waste, that we are not putting more thought into this show than the creators of it are. And at this point, nothing from the interviews that we've seen and from the extra material that's been put out there and the speculation on their part and the engagement with the cast and crew online, like none of that to me has read, oh, this is a show that people kind of go to and leave and don't really put that much thought into. Like, that's just not the vibe.
Yeah. I agree. I agree with all of that. You know, another thing that really struck me on this rewatch is, you know, we're always famously tickled by every passage in the UUR. It's incredible. We are richly treated with a lot of UUR passages in this episode. And, you know, this is like, it's just so, I can't help but think about like the labor rights moment that we're in and how this show is about the value of labor and the abuses of labor really fundamentally. Yep. It's like incredibly prescient and of the moment and poignant in revisiting it, given that the very people who created the show are currently on strike to be fairly treated. And you know, the fact that I've mentioned this before, that Adam Scott has kind of become the avatar of the working man, and that like this, the text of the UUR and Rickon's words are like very much these like salvos of you know, like the of pro-labor that caused this kind of philosophical awakening in Mark. It's really, really delightful and funny and poignant all at the same time.
Yeah, it's been really funny. There's a local port strike going on, and so the striking workers are kind of have all their chairs set up on the sidewalk across from the building where my work office is, and so I sort of like see them every day as I'm going into work, and that kind of juxtaposition. I'm like, I'm gonna go like slave to the man for 7.5 hours, but like, yeah, fight the power. I don't know. It's just always been a very funny dynamic for the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting, but like Helly as a character who is basically a slave to this corporation. She has like no ability to fight. She can't do anything to improve her rights, improve her stance, because her outer person, who is basically like her management, is like, nope, we're just gonna let you like stew away in there. That's fine, you know. Like recently the kind of leaked out that the studios executives, that their plan is just to try to basically starve the strikers out, that they keep it going until they can't do anything. And that's kind of like what's happening to Helly. Like, oh yeah, no, you can't do anything. You just have to, you know, and we'll wait you out because you have no power to change anything. And I think that is something that's definitely a parallel to what's going on right now. Like the people outside just don't care. This person was suicidal, and the people outside, like, yeah, we don't care. You're in there to do the job, so you do it, and you can threaten all you want, but it doesn't, you know, we have our bottom line, and that's all that we care about.
A society with festering workers cannot flourish, just like a man with rotting toes cannot skip.
Pre-trigging.
Yeah. Really.
And now said. Yeah, and right now, you know, we have our workers trying to break the world of film and streaming.
Yes.
Like, they're not trying to break the world of literature, but they're trying to break the world of streaming.
Okay.
To try and get their own due. So, I mean, yeah, Rickon, very prophetic, you know, the great prophet Rickon is like leading the way for the strikes of today.
And Rickon also anticipated this battle with AI when he said, what separates man from machine is that machines cannot think for themselves. Also, they are made of metal and man is made of skin.
Yep. I love that. I'm very behind on other podcasts, but I was recently listening to Jess and Marissa talk about how AI doesn't have a trauma history that they can pull from in order to write great stuff. And AI has never been like oppressed in a job. It's, you know, there's so much stuff that you can't pull on to make these like incredible shows. So it's, you know, it's not nearly the same. It's not nearly as good.
No.
I have a very tangent question for you, submitted by one of our listeners, that Todd, I'm not sure if you're aware, on a previous episode of the Severance Media Club, I was instructed as to the contents of Disco Fries.
Ah, yes, I did hear that one.
Yeah, yeah. So somebody wrote in, what would you use as toppings for Disco Fries? So like, if you could, I think...
No, Melissa. Here. For Discord fries.
Oh, Discord fries. I can read.
Discord
it's fine.
Fries.
Nice. Okay. So I would like to discuss Discord fries, but I would also like to discuss how awful would the combo of corn pudding and Disco fries be?
Oh, man. What's funny is I actually watched a show that mentioned Disco Fries after I listened to that podcast. I was rewatching the animated series The Venture Brothers because they're doing a movie coming out next week. So I rewatched the whole series. One episode they mentioned disc, they're at a diner. They're like, what are Disco Fries? Like, I can't believe I'm hearing a Disco Fries reference. But yeah, I've never had corn pudding, so I can't say for sure, but I cannot imagine that corn pudding plus Disco Fries would be a good thing.
I bet you can get that at some diner somewhere. Like, I imagine that. Like, I think that there's some road stop somewhere in, probably not in Canada, but definitely in the U.S., Melissa, where somebody's, like, serving a pile of corn pudding on fries.
And instead of the gravy, it's the corn pudding. I could see that being, like, a state fair somewhere. I could definitely see that being some sort of state fair food.
Yeah. Considering our love of the corn emoji in the PSR Discord, I do think that corn pudding as a topping for Discord fries does kind of make sense, actually. I think the true answer to that question is like tater tots, because tater tots on Discord fries does also seem like a PSR Discord battle waiting to happen.
I was about to say, if you want the tater tot wars to resume, then saying Discord fries or tater tots would definitely be the way to
do. Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like the other, gosh, there any of the other emojis that we use in the Discord are just not appropriate for kind of sharing to the general public in terms of the Chicago Fire fire truck on top of Wanda Shirk. It's like the first one I'm thinking of as just some truly ridiculous stuff. So, you know, patreon.com/photoshowrecaps if you want to see some of the abominations that we use.
Get some more appetizing emojis in the mix. We need some help.
Yeah, not the turtle face from Teenage Turtles.
That's what I was thinking. The turtle face from Teenage Mutant Turtles that I would probably use to react to this conversation. Yeah. As it's very much of like what is going on type of reaction emoji, or the Emily worried of Emily Fox hands on her head in horror reaction, which I frequently try to use at work and realize I can't react to things in my teens channel.
Right.
With that emoji, and I'm forever sad because it's like one of my most used emojis.
It should be universal. It really should be.
Yeah, that was Emily's reaction when I made her answer the question of if tater tots are fries. Excellent. Oh man. So this has been awesome. I think that we found more connections than we want. I sort of want the West Side Story parody of Severance now.
Yeah.
I think it's good. I think it's there. But yeah, is there any like kind of big Severance thoughts, Todd, that you wanted to kind of go as we're like wrapping up here? We talked to you. You were our very first guest on the
You
Severance
were.
Podcast,
I know.
Which
was
awesome.
It was Todd who first alerted us that the opening credits are very, very trippy, and they remain very trippy. I think, yeah. Honestly, watching this once a month, I'm continually surprised by the opening credits. They're always like, they're a little bit longer, a little bit like you don't become inured to it when you're watching it like week to week. So I've been delighted by that opening credits sequence. Great music and like great theme music in Severance as well. Yeah. Any other thoughts about episode 5 or Severance in general? We do have some more business to get to today as we talk about where we're going next and what our next poll is going to be.
So I think my thoughts on episode 5, as I was rewatching it to do this, was just, I think this may have been the episode that fully cemented my, I think I loved the show from the get-go. But I think this episode with this, the amount of weirdness in it, because I'm a big fan of weird things. I love weird movies. I'm a big horror movie guy as well. So the horrific paintings that they're using, and then the mythology that the different departments have come up with and what the other people are doing, the fact that they're like basically alien creatures and things like that, and that they had developed this mythology about everything, was just stuff that really, really appealed to me and like really cemented my love for the show that I already was enjoying. But I think this was the episode that kind of maybe pushed it over into full-blown, this is like one of my top shows. So yeah, I think this was I'm super happy I got on this one, plus all the Rickon quotes. I was so happy when I started watching and we got like the barrage of Rickon quotes, because I remember the first time I watched it and just like being flabbergasted in the best way to hear all of Rickon's thoughts. So I'm so happy that this was the episode that I got to be on for, because it just had lots of really bizarre, weirdo, horror tinge stuff that is just my bread and butter. So I don't know if I have like, because I haven't been watching along with the Media Club, and so I don't have like any big overarching Severance thoughts other than I love the show and I'm excited for it to come back whenever it may come back, however long that takes.
Well, we are so glad to have had you on here, Todd. As like an early adopter who is watching Severance with us from minute one, also the perfect guest to talk about Schmigadoon, the will of the listeners, that's what they wanted us to talk about, and we found the perfect guest to usher us through all of that. Fantastic to have you on. And We did have a poll for our listeners to, again, in their infinite wisdom, suggest a piece of media for us to discuss in the month of August. And now I was super, super excited, Melissa, about this poll. Like what we gave, the options we gave our listeners this time around was pick a member of the Severance cast. Pick any, we gave the options. We had John Turturro, Britt Lauer, Adam Scott, Christopher Walken. I think we also included Ben Stiller, Patricia Arquette, Zach Cherry. So many fantastic, fantastic performers in here. Pick one of them and we will pick the piece of media by that cast member or crew member to do a deep dive into. So I was excited because maybe we would get one of the great character actors of our time, like John Turturro or Christopher Walken, who have incredibly deep catalogs to explore, dozens and dozens of movies, Oscar nominated award winners, both. We're not going to watch.
Maybe we would have got that.
No, we're not going to watch. We're not going to watch any of that, any of those great films. We're not going to watch any of the Coen brothers' work. We're not going to watch any of the great Christopher Walken films. Christopher Walken, only 5.9% coming in fourth. John Turturro, 11.8%, second place, but we're not going to be watching that. I also thought, hey, oh my God, maybe I'll get to watch and talk about Adam Scott, who is fantastic. I just finished covering Party Down, of course, Parks and Rec, lots of films, another great character actor, a deep catalog. He was in Loot, which I covered. I've been really enjoying Adam Scott. No, we're not going to talk about Adam Scott. 5.9%, fourth place. Ben Stiller is a great director, a great actor and performer. We also talked about Walter Mitty, which was directed by Ben Stiller, starring Adam Scott. Really seems relevant to Severance. He's not even on this list. I got the results from Josh. Ben Stiller didn't even clock at all on here. No blips here. We're not going to talk about him. Should I just tell our listeners, Melissa, who they selected? They already know. You picked him. They know.
It's the one you all voted for.
We're talking about Zach Cherry.
I'm so excited.
The great Dylan S. Zach Cherry, who... I'm going to open up his IMDb right now. We love Dylan. Oh, yeah. I think comedic character of the year, or character of the year in the patron end of the year review. So, very beloved by our patrons, and of course he is because he's phenomenal. Now, so I don't have any issue with Zach Cherry as an actor, but if you look at his IMDb,
it's not very popular.
It's a little bit thin. So, okay, he was in 9 episodes of Severance. I love that show. That's great. I would love. Wait. We're already watching that.
We should watch that.
And then he's in Bloodweed, which is a podcast series. Okay, he is a voice of an animated character in Duncanville. He's in episodes of this animated series. Let's click on Duncanville. Duncanville, oh, it stars Amy Poehler and it's on Hulu. Okay, so that's in the running, this animated series where Zach Cherry does a voice. He's in one episode of Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. one episode of Succession. I hear that's a pretty good show. So we're gonna have to we'll get something together here about Zach Cherry. I'm really looking forward to talking about him. I've heard him on a couple of episodes of Doughboys. We can do a recap of the podcast Doughboys. But we'll find something and we're gonna talk about Zach Cherry, just like you all want us to do. Great work, audience. 10 out of 10, no notes. And we will require your services once again. because we have to figure out what we're going to talk about in September. September, it's the fall, Melissa. People are going back to school. You and I love doing that. We kept on going back to school.
Yeah, we did that for a really long time.
We decided, you know, we're going to hit the books in September, and we are going to try, all of us, to read a whole book. A whole book that is somehow related to Severance. There's a number of these lists online. Esquire published this list of books, what to read if you miss Severance, whether you're craving workplace satires, technological horror, or memory-bending mysteries. This is a list that includes all of these. Tell Me an Ending by Joe Harkin, Vintage, The Meadow, The Memory Police by Yoko Ogawa. There's a number of books on here that look really, really interesting. Several People Are Typing by Calvin Kasulke. So we are going to put this list up on another one of our Google Forms and have you vote. I will come up with what have we been using, Melissa, for these links? This is a Josh thing that he usually does.
We'll include the link in the show notes for sure. And then it has been it is postshowrecaps.com/MDR, I believe is where you can go to vote on the list. So, you know, give us a day to kind of get that up, but we'll make sure that you have access to the list and the little like synopses of all of these books. Some of them look incredible. I kind of want to read all of them, but that will not happen.
Yeah. Anymore. There's, Vintage, The Circle by Dave Eggers is on here. Like this seems like a really great list. I can't wait to get into one of these books. So we'll put this up and look forward to getting your votes.
Yeah. Even one of them is named Severance. Ling Ma has a book called Severance that's an apocalyptic satire, office drudgery. I think that there are so many here that are going to be great.
I like that one's chances.
Right? Yeah, people will be like, that one's the same. There's so many. These, like, the descriptions in here have all made me intrigued by it. So I'm very excited for whatever the people vote for. We'll make sure that you have access to the little description so that you can make an informed choice, but we won't read, you know, abstracts for a bunch of books on the podcast. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. I mean, this has been a lot of fun to get back together. I love kind of get together to do the Severance Media Club. It's definitely helping me cope with this long wait between seasons. And I think that we can anticipate that we're going to have to keep on waiting, but it's for good reason. Thanks again for joining us, Todd. Where can the people keep up with everything that you're doing?
Thanks for having me. You can find me on Twitter at Librarian Todd, because Todd Librarian was too many characters. You can also find Adam H. and I talking all about season 2 of Schmigadoon in the PSR archives on the Binge Shows feed. And you can also find Adam, myself, and TV Lindy every week over on One Indescribable Podcast, where we talk about more musical TV. We're currently covering Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. We are almost done with the second season. Melissa will hopefully be on before the season is over. But it's been a lot of fun to go through, and now we're trying to figure out what musical show we're going to cover next. But you can find out more about that at our Twitter for that show at 16G Podcast.
Yeah, highly recommend all the stuff happening over on One Indescribable Pod. It is a great time. I was doing a big kind of catch up listen to all the podcasts, and the amount of times that I had to like stop myself from laughing out loud as I was walking down the street on my way to work in the morning to something that you all were saying was a significant amount of time. So yeah, it's a really great time over there, and I highly recommend everybody check it out, especially if you have listened to Adam and Todd on PSR Podcast. They do kind of more of the same over there, but kind of even more so once they're given no limit. You know, they're editing their own podcast, so they can be as long as they like.
Yeah, put that edit in quotes. Some of the any editing happens is not necessarily realistic, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's a great time. Thank you so much. Amanda, do you have stuff people should check out in the meantime?
Yeah, I'm in a little bit of a lull between shows right now, but you can keep up with everything that I am doing on Twitter, where I'm at Dr. Amanda R. That's Dr. Amanda R. Recently, I got to appear on the Rob Has a Podcast Network on Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, doing Rob and Akiva PR firm, where we rehabilitate some struggling brands, like maybe Lumen could have used some rehabilitation. We did talk about Twitter, but check me out on RHAP on Renap, and just follow me on Twitter. That's the best way to keep up with anything else that I'm doing. And how about you, Melissa?
Yeah, so I'm talking Doctor Who over on the main feed with Kevin Mahadeo and Adam H. So that has been a really great time. We have been kind of going through. We are very close to starting series 5, which is where I started watching Doctor Who. So it's a really great time to jump in. You definitely don't have to kind of go back over the old stuff that we're doing, but you can just jump in with our beginning of series 5 start, and you will get to see the great Matt Smith as the Doctor. It's a truly awesome time, so I highly recommend it. Otherwise, you can catch me playing Dungeons & Dragons over on twitch.tv/DMPhilly for our Dragonfly D&D in Space show. We've had some episodes recently with some big kind of like character stuff, so that's been fun. And otherwise, you'll catch us here next month talking Severance Episode 6 and the great Zach Cherry. It will be our tribute to Zach Cherry, and I'm so excited. It's going to be great. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.